Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you back with us again. Today, it's kind of exciting. We are happy to welcome Dr. Diane Weiss back with us. She is a psychiatrist that has been featured here on Close Up Talk Radio in the past. And it's exciting for us to welcome her back in a two-part series on empowering patients to wellness. And that's what we want to do. We want patients and obviously listeners to be well, everybody to be well. Dr. Weiss is a psychiatrist. She's a psychotherapist who has been named among our empowering women in America because of the way she approaches patients' needs, and she helps them take part in their own discovery and improvement. Dr. Diane, everybody calls her Dr. Diane, has been approaching mental health treatment in this area for nearly 34 years in private practice. She loves working with serious and often long-standing issues, getting deep. She has treated people with anxiety, depression, insomnia, ADD, stress, obsessive-compulsive tendencies, a lot of things, PTSD, unhappiness, unwanted habits. That's an interesting one. Eating disorders, medical difficulties, chronic pain, and a lot of other mental illnesses. It's really pretty amazing the kind of things that she can do to treat people. To tell you a little bit about her, prior to going to medical school, in addition to the prerequisite science courses, she studied languages, literature, and cultures. Then she got a master's degree in population, family, and international health, the Division of School of Public Health. Her desire to do good for the public has always been a really pretty strong one, and helping someone to help the person they want to be has been much more important to her than any label or diagnosis. She finds individualized analysis much more appealing than just going by the book, as they put it. In any event, she's highly educated, board certified in psychiatry by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology since 1990. She became a fellow of the American Psychiatric Association and has been in private practice at the same office in Beverly Hills since she finished her psychiatric residency at a division of UCLA. She's obviously a highly educated and really welcome doctor, and one that we're delighted to have with us. So let's bring her back on with us now for her second visit here on Close Up Talk Radio. Dr. Diane, welcome back. How are things in California today? What's it like? How would you describe the weather out there? What would you say?
Well, I think it hasn't quite gotten as hot as it's going to get, as it's been, but it's all relative, and we have the good weather here. And I'm excited to be on to do what I can to help people to get help.
I am so glad that you've spared the time to be with us. You are a board, as I mentioned this before, you're a medical doctor who is board certified in psychiatry, and you also have a master's degree in public health. You've got so many degrees, my goodness. Can you tell us something about the highlights of your education? I know most of it took place at UCLA in Los Angeles and at the University of Boston University, obviously in Boston, but you also studied at Guadalajara in Mexico. How did all of these broad learning experiences kind of bring you to where you are now? How would you answer a question like that?
I think so much is dependent on, you know, the person has their certain life and their certain personality, and I'm very interested in understanding people and in recognizing their individuality and you know, the word diversity. People can be not alike but like alike deep down, and you know, so having these different experiences hopefully helps me to be able to really empathize and kind of get in with a person that comes from different cultures, I think last time I might have talked about the biopsychosocial part of the looking at the whole person, not just, like a series of chemicals in the body or organs in the body, but where does this person come from? And so I had, I also spent time in Chicago and in San Diego and the different institutions where I was learning. And while I was learning, I was living in these different places, but the different institutions have their own cultures. And, you know, we come from different backgrounds, and including in our family and the what happens in our family, what happened in our parents' backgrounds. There's cultures and subcultures, you know, even within L.A. And different generations. So hopefully I can be open and perceptive and attuned, you know, with my knowledge of the different things that I studied, that I can kind of use those to help people and to relate to more people and more situations.
You know, I'm impressed with the things you have studied, and I wanted to ask you about this because, as I understand it, when you began your college careers, you studied languages, literature, and cultures. Did you know what you wanted to do, or, you know, when you first went to school? I'm wondering why you focused on languages in the beginning and literature. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. Well, I actually wanted to be a psychiatrist after I saw a movie about Freud and a psychosomatic problem that was cured, meaning the woman thought she was blind, but she wasn't blind. And I was 13 years old. And I always was very interested in the humanities, in writing, in analyzing characters in books and in movies, which I think is kind of a lot of what I do as a psychiatrist. And I really wanted to be a psychoanalyst, but I also wanted to know, you know, how the body worked and why one person would get a headache and why another person would get a stomach ache and how you could help. And so I didn't want to limit my education to just the sciences. Some of my colleagues are more scientifically oriented, and perhaps I'm not. But and then it happened, and I actually I think I had a lot of anxiety, and I also applied to medical school in a year that it was very hard. And a lot of Americans went down. I started medical school in Mexico, in Guadalajara, and I was able to transfer and graduate from Boston University School of Medicine. But it just so happened that way. When I was applying to medical school the first time, I was not accepted. I am a very persevering person, and I believe that, you know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And I try to help that. Use that with people. But I ended up going to the School of Public Health at UCLA instead of just starting medical school. And I went to medical school in Boston, in Mexico, and then I transferred to Boston. And in the School of Public Health, I needed to choose a major, and I was interested in this population, family, and international health, which also was about cultures and medical anthropology. So I'm very interested in that which is not so definite and which varies, I guess you could say. It's more fascinating to me than something that's more familiar, but to know, to have a broader look at everyone and everybody and to understand a person's mind, to try to help them in connecting with them. It just helps to be more open to differences.
You know, I understand your experiences very well. It's ironic. Our stories connect here. I have a brother who did the same thing you did. It was tough getting into medical school at first, and he went to medical school in Guadalajara and then transferred here, to the U.S. And it's really funny. I've forgotten. But when you studied in Guadalajara, was that going to medical school, speaking Spanish, for the most part?
Yes.
Or not?
Yes.
It was.
It was.
I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know how my brother did it, and you did study languages. I presume that came in very handy for you at that point. Am I right?
Yes, yes. I would like to know what year your brother was there.
Well, I don't have it off the top of my head right now, but I'm sure it was after
right,
you left.
Right, right. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, actually, I'm in a lot of ways, I think I'm old-fashioned. And when I was younger, I wanted to learn a lot of languages. My family, my father spoke many languages. His first language was actually Hungarian. And before he spoke English, and at home they spoke Hungarian. And I started with Latin and in high school and in junior high school, middle school. And then I through a series of events, I studied German and Swedish, and I have a bachelor's degree in Scandinavian languages. And then I thought, well, maybe I'm going to have to go to Guadalajara. So while I was in the School of Public Health, I learned Spanish.
I am so impressed with people like you who have that ability. I was a terrible language student, but good for you. Congratulations. Let me ask you a little bit about your practice. The folks who come to see you, what are the prime kinds of? I listed a number of the conditions that you work with. I mean, you cover a lot of territory. How would you describe what your practice is like? To other people, what do you say? How do you tell them it is?
Well, like conditions which I'm able to help people with. And I would say that I think that most of the people that end up coming to me and probably to other psychiatrists, they have more than one problem at the same time. And the issue is very often there may be symptoms and ways of coping that are not so helpful when I mentioned those unhealthy habits, like people with pulling their hair or maybe having checking behaviors where they have to keep going back to make sure they locked the door, that the stove was turned off. There's different manifestations of deeper problems. But then there are conditions. And so the first thing I would tell you is anxiety and panic. And then there's depression and more people with ADD, lack of confidence and understanding the self and being kind of, it's hard to grow up in this world and to really be an adult and to be independent and to live one's own life. That's difficult for a lot of people for different reasons. They have sleep problems, PTSD and traumas, and then different kinds of situations. But all of these problems can come with other problems, like unfortunately, or the people that come to me might have anxiety, but they also have depression. Usually it's not just one set of symptoms. And I think people try to do their best to cope, but often what they use to try to cope is not the best. Like if they are afraid of other people, they might stay home and not engage. And so the idea is to try to help them to maximize who they can be.
Well, I know you have many different tools that you can use to help clients, and I've just been wondering. In fact, I'm amazed. You have a wonderful website with a lot of amazing information. The doctor's website, by the way, is obviously she's based in Beverly Hills. It's Diane Weiss, M.D., DianeWeiss.com. If you go there, you'll learn how to get in touch with the doctor and all the various methods that she uses to treat people. I should ask you, doctor, I do speak to doctors, occasionally who can help people in other cities, and they do it by Zoom, believe it or not, now because of COVID. And I guess it all depends on the where they're licensed to practice. How about you? Are your patients primarily ones you see in person, or do you do it on Zoom, as so many have been forced to do because of COVID? How about that?
Well, it has changed, and often I think if I can see the person at least the first time in person, it's better. some people really need to be seen in person. Some of the sessions we can do in Zoom. Often the telephone is quite intimate, and people sometimes maybe there's a theory of in psychoanalysis actually of letting yourself, you know, speak out and not responding so much to, let's say, if you're looking at me and I'm talking to you and they're talking to me, they're seeing my facial expressions and reactions, but rather they're just talking on the phone and they don't see me. Unfortunately, and I still get supervision from a professor at UCLA who is an expert in psychopharmacology and in medication, and we have different psychiatrists. There's four of us are in the same group, and we meet sort of monthly, and we talk about issues. And it came up probably, I don't know, or in the fall, maybe when COVID was seeming to be changing, that we're really not supposed to see people on Zoom if I don't have the license, and I have the license in California.
Okay.
But that's
allowed
me to see people in other cities in California.
Exactly, exactly. What would you say are the most difficult problems that people come to see you with to treat? I mean, there's so many: ADD, you know, attention deficit disorder, stress, people who suffer from eating disorders and medical difficulties. I know there's some things that are much harder to treat than others. How would you answer that? What do you feel are the most difficult for a psychiatrist like you to treat?
You know, I really hadn't thought about that question because it's so much dependent on the individual, and really I have to be kind of in an alliance. I'm the ally with the patient, and they have to really kind of be able to put their trust and into the fact that they want to get better and they're willing to do the work. And I think that people, sometimes they're too enmeshed in how things have been over and over again. I end up seeing a lot of people that really haven't grown up, even though they may be able to do jobs and be an adult, but they're still too attached to some of the, like, they're kind of like emotionally stuck in a younger age, and they don't really see themselves as a complete person who's independent, and it's hard to change habits. You know, like some people, they might be living in a cave where it's dark and cold, but that's what they're familiar with, and to get them out of there, you know, as much as this may sound counterintuitive, they're kind of maybe more afraid of success than they are of a failure, because they're just kind of stuck, and that takes a lot of work. And then they have these different kinds of symptoms. If someone can be helped with medication, and they just need a combination or one medication, that's a very good thing. But whatever happens, I tend not to see so many people like that. You know, where more is needed to
find
the source of the problem.
You are working with people with deep, serious problems. There's no question about that. How long do you find that it typically takes to get someone better? Maybe not totally well, but better. I mean, there are, you know, I know people who've been going to see psychotherapists, and they go for years. I don't know if that's necessary, but we all know people who have stories like that. How would you answer that? What can one expect when they come to see someone like you, and how long that treatment could last? Is there a general answer to that or not?
Yeah, well, that, you know, that's also, I think, some of the stereotypes. Like, there's this idea that certain mental disorders that people suffer from, that it's like having diabetes or high blood pressure. They need treatment basically forever. although I believe that with diabetes, there's a lot you can do in changing your lifestyle, your blood pressure. There's things that you can do to try to help, let's say, to get off the medications. And there's such a thing as medical doctors, and I'm a medical doctor, called case management. And so you just know that the person is going to be with you for the duration. But as it is very important, you if the person is too ill that you can't reach them, that they can't get better somewhat, you know, then you need to help them earlier on. And that really varies. There's too many variables, but it could be some weeks or months. Certain medicines really help people to be able to do, let's say, the deeper work within 3, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. Sometimes they have side effects, and you have to try a different one. And as far as other long-term problems, the relationship, I try to develop a relationship with the patient, with the healthy side of the patient, but also incorporating that which is not. And so that the person can get their own relationship with themselves and find their own answers, which it really has to be in order to be authentic. They have to feel it. And so it is a process that we have. And we don't want to say that it has an end. You know, the end will come. It could take some years. And it just depends. It might not, till the person says, I'm healthy enough, or I want to keep exploring more and going deeper, or having this base where I can grow and develop as a person. And so what I'm trying to say is that I think that the situational easier problems, maybe I don't see them. They don't come to me.
Yeah. It's very interesting, because it's different. You know, when one goes to see a doctor, maybe they've broken their arm, or they have a bad cold or something like that, and they go see a doctor, they get treated, and a little while later, you know, within a relatively short period of time, they get better. But you work with people that sometimes it takes a long time for them to feel better and to get cleared out. And I know you are constantly, I find this very interesting, that you're constantly exploring and learning additional ways to help your patients. For example, on your website, you point out you've been implementing hypnosis and hypnotherapy in your practice, which is something new, and you're about to be officially certified as a hypnotherapist by the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis. That's very interesting that you brought that into your practice. Why have you been doing that? Do you find a need for that, and you think it'll be very helpful, obviously?
Well, I wanted to say, and I appreciate your compliments about my website, but the website is quite old. I'm in the process of updating it. I wanted it to be updated before now, and you know, so it's a little bit out of date, and I think there's maybe more specific ways I can express myself. So just for the audience, that I will be updating the website. But I actually, there's the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, and there is the American Academy of Medical Hypnoanalysts, and I have studied both. I was interested in hypnosis because I was seeing a lot of people with chronic pain who just their whole life was upended. I mean, they had depression, social withdrawal. They couldn't concentrate, all kinds of problems, then family problems because of the pain and the loss of mobility that different injuries would give them. And so I thought there has to be a way, mind over matter. We have this opiate crisis. I never, as a psychiatrist, I never would prescribe opiates. But a lot of the patients would tell me that they would be taking opiates, and it wasn't helping. I was interested in hypnosis because one can control a lot of aspects of one's life and symptoms because hypnosis is self-hypnosis. And then there's a type of hypnosis that I was exposed to and learned and got involved with and do with my patients, where it's kind of like a quickened form of psychoanalysis which is really getting deep into the person's unconscious and helping them to find the answers and the solutions to the symptoms that they have. And this is by using hypnosis, where you're very relaxed, but yet you're with a lot of attention at the same time. And so I wanted to be open to different kinds of ways to treat people, because medications, unfortunately, do not always just do the trick. If they do, that's fine. But and psychiatrists learn to give psychiatric medicines. But I wanted to be able to help people and give them some other tools.
Well, you're doing a fantastic job. There was one other mention here that I found very interesting. Something you wanted to include in your practice, it referred to as clean language. What was that? What is that? How would you answer that?
Well, that is a way of, it was originated by a man from New Zealand, David Grove, who unfortunately had passed away some years ago, and it was originated in the 80s with his partner, Kai Davies Lynn, who is in England, and she's a nurse and a psychotherapist. And I was fortunate to have been able to work some years with particular patients with Kai. We would have some, it was Skype before COVID, and she would be in England on the Skype, and the patient and I would be in the office together, and we would do sessions. And the whole point of this, it's clean, because a therapist might ask questions, and that's what the therapist wants to know. But this is a process where you repeat the words of the patient, and you use metaphors, because the idea is that it helps with trauma. It can help with other things. And when I say trauma, psychological and physical trauma leading to psychological trauma from the past, perhaps the child had a bad experience and they were 3 years old, and now this person is an adult, and the person didn't have the words to talk about how they felt about it. And so you use metaphors. And it is also a process where you, like, let's say you put a lot of your worries into a bag and you bury that bag and you walk away. And it uses symbols, and it's very good for certain people. And I don't know if I'm explaining it, because it's a little bit hard.
I think you did well. It's not exactly what I thought it was. Clean language. It's very good. I thought, well, boy, that's pretty cool. Dr. Weiss, I wish we had so much more time. I just wanted to ask you quickly, you've been doing this for 34 years, actually longer, I guess, but you love what you do. It's a terrific life, and I know you're so proud of what you've been able to accomplish. I thank you for taking the time to be with us, and hopefully maybe we could talk to you again sometime in the future. I want to remind everybody, you say your website may be dated a little bit, but it's full of very valid information. And it's really very terrific, and I think you should be applauded for it. But our guest has been Dr. Diane Weiss. She's Dr. Diane to everybody, all of her patients. She's based in Beverly Hills, California. But if you want to get in touch with her, you can do it by going to her website. It's DianeWeissMD.com, DianeWeissMD.com. And you can get all kinds of information on her from there. Dr. Weiss, thank you so much for taking the time out to be with us today. It's been a delight, okay? We really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. And, again, find a way. Don't give up and get help. And if you know someone that needs it, help them to get that help. Because it's important to have the best life possible.
That's very great advice from Dr. Diane Weiss. Thank you, Doctor. Wonderful.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.
And we do. That'll wrap it up for the show, everybody. Hope you've had a good time and learned a lot, and we will look forward to seeing you back here soon again on Close Up Talk Radio. Till then, take care and be safe. Bye for now.